Well, hey guys, welcome to Reengage. We've got the holiday thinning of the crowd, which sometimes happens, but we're glad you guys are here tonight. So tonight is going to feel a little bit like high school. And so I don't know if this happened at your high school, but at my high school, what they would do is they would always bring out a car that had been completely wrecked by a drunk driver and set it out there for a reminder for all the dumb high school kids that thought that wouldn't happen to them. Did that happen at your high school? Okay, I was in Oklahoma, so they probably had to use lots of scare tactics to get kids to do good things. And so, but I remember seeing that, you know, and that wasn't my scene anyway, but apparently they thought that was a really helpful tactic to get people from doing dumb stuff or doing things that would eventually be incredibly harmful to them or to others. And so tonight, that's a little bit of the tone of what's going to happen here. We're going to talk about divorce, and it's going to have a little bit of that, like, here's the car wreck kind of feel to it. So you might not want to do this, okay? And so we'll wrap it up at the end. And so a lot of us are in a lot of different places. I mean, Susan was just telling me about some of the stories that are in the room tonight. You know, we've got folks who have, you know, divorce papers literally in hand. And I always think, you know, Susan, we haven't institutionalized this, but I think it would be awesome at celebration night. If you had filed for divorce coming in, bring your divorce papers to celebration night. And if that's where you are, like, man, let's have a party and rip them up. We've done that before, but we've never like institutionalized it. It'd be really fun. So do that. Okay. Some of you guys have, you know, papers in hand. Some of you are just kind of like, hey, if I'm honest, like this is something that I could see myself doing. Okay. And I know that some of us are in there, and some of us are kind of like, hey, that would never happen to us. We would never get a divorce. We would never utter those words, which many people have thought. So lots of folks in the room, I think wherever you are, I think God's got something for you. But I want to introduce you to some, you might not know all these guys. These all three of these guys are Reengage leaders here, and they all have a connection to divorce, okay? And so I want you to hear from each of them, and then we'll have just a little bit of a Q&A, and then we'll head to small group. Okay, so first up is Alyssa Malden, and Alyssa's been around Watermark for a long time, 16 years, yeah. And, we've watched them raise their family. It's been really fun. Alyssa and Shane have led lots of re-engaged groups, but I know you have a connection to divorce. Do you mind sharing that?
Okay. 30 years ago, my dad set all of us down to tell us he was leaving. I was 12 years old, and my whole world changed that day. We had been a close family who did everything together, but all of that became a broken mess, and the life I knew was gone. My parents' divorce affected my six siblings and me in very significant ways, and the ripple effects of my dad's decision are still present today in our lives and in the lives of our children. Even though my dad stayed very involved in our lives, I lost my protector and provider, and I soon learned how to navigate daily life without him. I became very self-reliant and independent, and I was determined to always take care of myself and never rely on anyone to provide for me. Because of the financial insecurity that the divorce created, I started working at age 13 and took on a caretaker role in my family. I felt a lot of anger toward my dad, and though I loved him deeply, I was an adult before I was able to forgive him for what he had done. The divorce also affected me as a wife. My independent mindset caused me to look out for myself first, and because I was the caretaker in my family of origin, I prioritized their needs over the needs of my husband, Shane. It was hard for me to connect emotionally with Shane in the early years of our marriage. And even now, I have a really hard time being vulnerable. I can now recognize how detached I become during moments of conflict and high emotion, and I have to make myself lean in and engage with him. In my darkest moments, I feel like I will never be able to love him the way I should because of how damaged I feel from the divorce. And it's only by God's grace that we ourselves are not divorced, although we did come close. Today, our marriage is strong and sure thanks to God's redemptive work in our lives. The divorce has also affected me as a mom. Shane and I are raising our kids to follow God's ways, and we teach them that marriage is a lifelong commitment. So it's a difficult conversation to have with them when they ask why Gramps and Grandma aren't married to each other anymore. It's a hard thing to explain to a four-year-old, especially because we don't want our kids to think that one day daddy and mommy will change their minds the way their gramps did. So these are conversations that I wish I didn't have to have. For those of you who are contemplating divorce and are believing the lie that kids are resilient and they will be okay, I would like to close with this. Several years ago, my dad called us all together for a family meeting. My siblings and I were all curious as to what the meeting was about, and every single one of us jokingly said, "Maybe mom and dad are getting back together." Now, this was ridiculous because they were both married to other people, but I think that it shows, even as adults, the desire of our hearts was for our family to be whole again. My dad actually called the meeting to ask for our forgiveness, but in spite of the regret he now feels, it's too late to undo what was done. Even though I have forgiven my dad, and we have a good relationship today, the wreckage of his decision to divorce my mom is still a painful part of my life, and the sadness with it never completely goes away.
Thanks, Alyssa. Well, I want to talk about kids a little bit later tonight, but two things I hope you caught. One was just the effect that the whole divorce had on Alyssa. And a pattern I think we've noticed around here, especially for women, is this incredible self-reliance when you kind of move through a divorce. And I think we did this last year, I think, and it was a gal named Laura Stresa and Sonia McEwen and Alyssa. And these are like, women are like, you know, they're just lions, man, hear us roar. And they all have this story of self-reliance and how difficult that was in marriage when you're supposed to be, mutually interdependent. And so, you know, if you're thinking, man, we can get a divorce, the kids will come out unscathed, I would just say probably not true. Probably not true, right? And then, you know, part of the lesson is if that's your story as a kid, there's probably, and Brett will share his story in a second, but there's probably things for you to kind of be aware of. I might have been affected, right? I'm not a victim. I'm responsible. Alyssa would tell you I am 100% responsible for any sin patterns in my life, period, end of story. But some things that happened to me earlier on make it a little bit easier for me to fall into sin patterns than most. And so I want you to think about that tonight. And then just that story of, you know, Alyssa as a grown adult going over and still hoping that mom and dad will get together. And that's very real. That's a real common experience for adult children of divorce. So thanks so much, Alyssa. So Brett, I'd love to hear your story, bud.
Sure.
Brett and Jan are Re-Engage leaders here as well. Have done a phenomenal job. Brett's a master theologian. So if you have, like, seriously, I get any deep theological or apologetic issues, don't underestimate this guy. He knows a ton. So, all right, brother, blow our minds right now.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. Now, this isn't so mind-blowing, but it is my experience. My earliest childhood memories are of my parents fighting. I remember lying in bed and listening to them arguing so that even though I was in my bedroom with the door shut, I could hear them clearly. Even at that young age, I remember worrying that they would divorce. And when I was about 8 years old, they did divorce. All of the anger I had been exposed to made me angry. And for the next few years, I got into fights in school frequently. When I was 11, my mother remarried. My stepfather's job led us to move across the country almost immediately. And so what little security I felt at the time had come from my maternal grandparents who had always lived nearby and from my friends, most of whom I'd known all the years I'd been in school. And so the change was devastating to me. My younger sister and I would go twice a year to visit our father, and it was terrible, and I always dreaded it. He would spend a significant part of the visit telling me that when I turned 14, the court said I could choose whom I wanted to live with. And there was no chance I would have chosen him, but I didn't want to say that because it would have made him angry. So I just had to pretend that I would consider it. It produced terrible anxiety. During our visits, he would constantly talk bad about my mother. And after he remarried, our stepmother would join in on the talking down of my mother. My mother, meanwhile, she just didn't recognize the serious effects that her decision to remarry and move were having on my sister and me. Her own desire for temporal happiness had just blinded her to the effects that it was having on my sister and me. And I know that in retrospect, she sees the damage that was done and regrets much of what we were put through. Ultimately, all of this led me to be a very lonely child who felt insecure and depressed. My stepfather's career led us to move twice more while I was in school, so that it was an additional source of insecurity. And by the time I was 14, I began to experiment with alcohol as a way of dealing with insecurity and depression. The dependence on alcohol continued into adulthood and became a serious problem that almost cost me my marriage. Fortunately, when my wife put divorce on the table, I turned to God and He rescued me from my brokenness. Today, my wife Jan and I have turned our lives over to God, and He has healed our family in ways we could never have imagined. So what I would say is that if you think divorce will improve your life, I beg you to reconsider. Turn your life over to Christ and let Him lead you and your family to the life we were all created for. You cannot give your children a greater gift.
Awesome. Thanks, buddy. Yeah. That's well said. So I think this will be great if you would pass the mic to Will. Will Repito is actually a family lawyer. I guess what you call it, family law practitioner.
You could say I'm a divorce lawyer.
A divorce lawyer, yeah. Okay. And irony of ironies, is a re-engaged leader. So he and his wife, Devery, have been serving for years here. And Will actually sends a lot of folks here, right? So hopefully we won't have to go to court. Let's go to re-engage, and just tries to slow everything down as much as possible. There's been some great stories and some heartaches. But Will, I saw you, so Will is like, we are on the same team with Will, right? I wanted you to know that the divorce lawyer here, you're not trolling for business tonight, okay?
No, I'm not. Okay. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping that this ministry over the next 20 years will put me out of business.
Go, good. All right, we'll go do something else. You can come on staff and work with us. So I saw you nod when...
Just drink coffee and talk about the Bible? Isn't that what y'all do on staff?
That's all we do. That's all Susan Cox does. She just sits around and prays. She prays a lot. We can't afford to pay Susan by the hour. I will tell you that right now. Okay, so I saw you nod when Brett said, I can't remember your phrase, but effectively, like, hey, this is going to make life better. I think is what you said. Like, yeah. Don't believe a lie that somehow divorce will make your life better. And I saw you nod, so I'd love to hear what was kind of in your head when you hear people say that to you.
Well, John, I appreciate that. And I am a divorce lawyer, and I'll give a brief background on that. I started practicing law about 25 years ago as a solo practitioner in a small town, and the majority of what started to come to me in my first 3 to 4 to 5 years of business was divorce and family law. And so I never set out to be a divorce lawyer when I went to law school and graduated from law school. It really kind of found me, and what I found over the years is that God has used that to situate me in front of people that are going through a really, really dark and terrible time in their lives. And so when I heard Brett nod that my life will be better, I can tell you folks, it won't. Relationally, it won't be better. Economically, it won't be better. If you have children, it won't be better. When I heard Alyssa talking about those things, I just see so frequently people's children that go through divorce that otherwise would be standout kids. They're more likely to have trouble in school. They're more likely to learn how to be manipulative. They're more likely to gain their significance in inappropriate relationships with other people, whether sexually, whether drugs, whether alcohol. The people that are going to give them beer after school, well, those people accept them. Well, mom and dad don't because they've broken their marriage. And I tell you what, the most even the secular studies will tell you the most devastating thing you can do to a child is divorce that child's parents. It would be easier for you to die. A child will accept your death easier than the child will accept the divorce. It will be less painful for them because people die. That's normal. That's natural. Painful, they can work through that. But when you rip the security of that family away from a child, I've just seen it in 25 years of practice. People that grow up, when you hold that little one-year-old baby in your arms and you have all those hopes and dreams for that child, and then you shatter their life through divorce, you're automatically putting them behind the eight ball.
That's good.
And so when I just hear Brett talk about that, it won't make your life better, and it's selfish to believe that it will.
Well, you know, and you were talking about just the impact it has on kids. I just, when you said that, I was reminded in kind of our history at our school that we're at with our kids. One year, one of my children would come home and say, "Dad, there's this kid in our class. He is driving us crazy. Like, he is out of control. Like, I don't know what his problem is. You know, every day it's a disaster. I mean, I don't like this kid. You know, he's completely out of control." And it came out, you know, about 3 months later, Mom and Dad were going through a divorce. And my child was like, oh. You know, because otherwise, you know, he was presented himself as a normal, insane child, and it was way more traumatic, I think, than, you know, probably, I guarantee, than his parents had anticipated. Will, I think another lie is that once I divorce, then I'm like done with that person, and life will be, kids aside, life will be easy for me. I can get on and move on with my. My life. My hunch is some of your business is what happens after the divorce. So you want to speak to that at all?
Yeah, John, I would. Thank you for the question. First of all, what I see so many people, and I know that there are a lot of people in here with perhaps the mindset that if I could just fix him, if I could just fix her, then my life would be better. Notwithstanding the fact that your health may be bad, your economics may be bad, your business may be bad, your other relationships may be bad, you may have addiction, you may have infidelity, whatever it is. But if I can just fix the one thing that I think I do have control over, which is my marriage, by divorcing her, then all of my problems will go away. And what you're really doing is you're removing perhaps the one thing in your life that can help magnify your other problems and point you in a direction to resolution and healing in that area. So, first of all, life does not get better after a divorce for most people. And I just see that when people come back. I was in court today on a hearing where the ex-husband decided he just wasn't going to pay his child support anymore. And here they are, 8 years after the divorce, and they're still dealing with one another. And I'm telling you, folks, if you have children, you are going to be mom and dad to those children until the day you die. There are going to be weddings. There are going to be grandchildren. And God forbid, you do not want to be in a situation where the first time you're talking to your ex-spouse is after a car wreck and at the funeral home. You just don't want that to happen. And I've had that happen where people have lived a life like that, mm-hmm. where they've been so antagonistic mm-hmm. towards their ex-spouse that they won't have anything to do with them. And the first time they talk to them is literally at their child's funeral, whether it's by suicide or car wreck or alcohol or just bad luck.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, so the stats will bear that out, that couples, on balance, statistically, are no happier after a divorce than before, right? The lie is, I would just be happy. And the other one is, I'll just be free. Like, I won't have to deal with them anymore. And that is really short-term thinking, right? Because the reality is, you will always, if you've got kids, be involved in some capacity, and it's going to make things, at a minimum, more complicated, almost always more painful, okay? And so your life probably won't be better, and you probably won't be happier, and statistically, and you won't be done with this person, okay? And so I've got another way I want to close, but any like parting shots that either one of you have, and you don't have to have anything. But if there's anything else you wanted to say, I would love to. Just want to give you
the mic.
I have
something quick.
Yeah.
Just on the same topic of that it never ends as far as after the divorce. So, just recently, Thanksgiving was a couple of weeks ago, and just as far as as for children who are dealing with divorce, even when they're adults, my sister and I thought, hey, it'd be cool to have Thanksgiving this year at my dad's. Like, he lives on some land, and that'd be fun, whatever, for the grandkids. And so we're like, let's move Thanksgiving to my dad's instead of my brother's. Well, it turns out that my stepdad wouldn't come to my dad's, and so my mom wouldn't come to Thanksgiving. So my sister and I are left dealing with, you know, just like, all right, we're going to stay at my brother's, which is fine. It needed, I guess, to be on neutral ground. And my parents actually get along very well. It's the step issue as well. So just to say that here, my sister and I are in our 40s. She's on the phone crying. I'm like, just, you know, not feeling any emotion at all. And we're still dealing with it, even in a minor holiday way. So
still. And we'll be till the very end. Yes. To the very, very end. So, yeah. Brett, do you have anything? Yeah.
Yeah. I would just add that one of the things that happened to me, and I think is pretty common, is that because of all the antagonism between the two parties, and you're like stuck sort of as, I was the oldest child, so I was sort of like in this mediator position sometimes. And you learn, or I learned, to be very careful about what I said, you know, whether I would be, I learned not to be honest, to hide things. So even though at the age of 14, I was starting to experiment with alcohol, and if anybody had been paying attention, you'd think, well, they'd notice. My parents had no idea, and it wasn't just because they were oblivious. I got really good at hiding what I didn't want people to know. And I did that because there was so much sort of just constant controversy that I was trying to avoid with them, and that you just learn to hide. And it becomes very difficult then as an adult. You know, we talk about transparency and reengage, and there's so much that comes from being open and honest and having other people involved in your life. And it just, that was really difficult. And frankly, I've gotten a lot better at it, but there are still times when I can feel that temptation to withhold, you know, the truth, just because, I don't know, it's almost like it's just an instinct to be cautious in a way that that I see other people who grew up in very healthy, God-fearing families, they don't have. And I would just say it's more devastating on children than we could possibly, I think, communicate in this short time.
That's good. Okay. I think you have something real quick?
Yeah, just real quick. Divorce is the most ungodly vehicle to try to manipulate your spouse. And when you exercise that vehicle, what you automatically start doing right from that very moment is you teach your children how to be manipulative as well, and they will learn how to manipulate you. Guys, I'm just telling you, I do this day in and day out. I see very, very few marriages that can't be saved. And what we teach here at Reengage is what'll do it. You know, I would like for every husband and wife to take just a moment and look at your spouse. And I'm watching you do it. Everybody look at your spouse.
You want them to look at each other right now.
I want them to look at each other right now.
So do it, or he'll sue you.
That's right. The person you're looking at is not your enemy. Satan is your enemy. Sin is your enemy. You need to be looking at that person and looking back over their shoulder, watching their back and them watching yours. That's what you need to be doing. You don't need to be coming to see guys like me, because I will ask you those questions. I will ask you, so what's your part in this? Quit blaming her, quit blaming him. What's your part in this? Whether it's 1% or 99%, when are you going to take responsibility for that? What are you doing to pursue your relationship with Christ? And is this really what Christ is calling you to do? Are you in community? Who's telling you that this is okay? And finally, what would it look like if you took a step back and made a commitment to close the doors and just say, we're going to look at each other. We're going to say, you're not the enemy. I'm not the enemy. And you look for the enemy over each other's shoulder and you watch each other's back.
Awesome. All right. Hey, guys, will you give these guys a round of applause? Thank you so much. Come on, this. Hey, Suze, why don't you come up? I figured out how I want to close tonight. So I'm going to give you the last question in a second.
Thanks, sir.
So a couple things. One, I just want to make this real clear. Like, we're incredibly pro-marriage and commitment, okay? That said, if there's domestic violence going on, like this church and God is not okay with that. Okay, so we'd want to have that conversation. We would never be for someone being thrashed, either physically or emotionally, for a lifetime, so that whatever they didn't get a divorce. Okay, those are conversations we'd want to have and wade in waters with you. Okay, but back to the kids thing. Ryan Nixon, he had a brilliant phrase today. He said, you know, when we say that whole kids are resilient thing, effectively what we're saying is that adults are really, really fragile. They need to make sure they get their needs met every moment and that they're happy. Adults, they're fragile. Kids, they're resilient. And that's effectively what the lie in our culture is. Okay? And so the biblical and theological commitment you made to God before him and before others, when you said, I do, is you said, till death do us part. And you said it, right? And God is committing to you irrespective of what you have done. He is committed to you. It's his loyal, in the Old Testament, it's the word hesed. It's his loyal love that he expresses to you. That's the basis we have to express unconditional loyal love to our spouse. We don't pull it out of thin air and muscle our way through this. We rely on the unconditional love of God to show that to our spouse. But we keep our promise. And something I do believe, Matthew 19, we gloss by it real quick. It says, what God has joined together, right? Let no man separate. And we say that what God has joined together is a bit of a throwaway phrase. And somehow when you said yes, I think something supernaturally happened. And God joined somehow souls together. And we're not to tinker with things that God has supernaturally joined together. Okay? So that's the car wreck. That's the beat up car. Okay? Don't drink and drive. And you heard these guys, don't get a divorce. Okay? And if you are a product of divorce, man, think about if it's had an impact on you, okay? So I was joking with Susan today. This is Susan's idea for this night. I was like, Suze, man, the Christmas lights are out, you know, everybody's singing carols. Why are we going to do divorce panel tonight, you know? And, you know, she said, well, I think there's some folks who are thinking about that. And she's dialed in and she's right. But I think my hunch is one of the reasons you're passionate about that is because you and Raul, I think, were thinking about this. Yeah. And so you didn't. So now, years later, many of these guys have heard your story, but just talk for a second, Suze, just about that. We were on the precipice. We thought we would. We thought we'd be happy. And now, so yeah. What went through your mind as you heard all this?
Yeah, I'm just fighting back tears the whole time. And I didn't wear a waterproof mascara, so here come the raccoon eyes. I'll never forget walking in the church that first time with divorce papers on the table, assets divided. I found another place to live, and we were headed toward just wrecking our family apart. And guys, I showed up here because it was an ask of somebody who was running hard with Jesus. And just said, hey, you're listening to a lot of different people tell you a lot of different things, but are you listening to the one who created marriage in the first place? And that's God Almighty. And he's got a pathway that's going to help you enroll, move toward healing and restoration, and it's called his word. And would you just be willing to come and check out this thing called Reengage? And I sat here my first night in this room in Newcomers. Y'all, I had a hotel room key in my purse. Because I was still running amok and thinking that divorce and marrying somebody else would be what would bring me a life of happiness. And isn't it crazy what only God can do? Not only did God restore our marriage, and our girls get a front row seat of watching the power of the gospel lived out loud in front of them. You know that today I can stand before you as a girl who no longer has a hotel room key in her purse, but the key to a church. And who does that? Who does that? I mean, the Lord does that.
That's a great line. Use that line again. Write it in your book. That was brilliant. So, man, how glad are we that Raul and Susan didn't throw in the towel? Can you imagine this place? Oh. And the same will be said of by your kids, your friends, others, right? If you don't. And if you've been, if this is not your first marriage, man, make this your last. Whatever number you're on, this is your last marriage, okay? And you're going to commit to the one that you're sitting next to. And we will applaud your faithfulness to that marriage. So thanks, Suze. I think that's a great way to end.